back together again, kicking off a brand new week, Monday, February 27th, 2023, on Connecticut Today. We featured a chat with Republican State Senator Eric Berthel on a bill expanding job opportunities for younger workers. I also had a few thoughts on word that the origin of COVID-19 might be coming into clear focus. Speaking of Stunad, oofa! Speaking of us Thrunes out there, you know, I often lament on this program the degree to which people don't trust government anymore, right? And I think a healthy cynicism, a healthy, I have trouble saying distrust, but maybe I go back to the old Ronald Reagan thing, remember him? What did he say, especially when it came to dealing with the Russians and arms talks and promises made by other countries? Remember Mr. Reagan always used to say, trust but verify. Yeah, trust but verify, which is kind of how I, you know, spend my life, right? Somebody says something, you say, oh, okay, I'll immediately or initially trust you, but I'm going to be looking to see, you know. Are you really serious here? Now, what am I talking about? Well, a story broke over the weekend that didn't get a whole lot of play by the mainstream networks. What a surprise. It was out there a little bit, but to no one's surprise, it didn't get a big push from ABC, NBC, CBS, PBS, NPR, MSNBC, CNN, the usual suspects. But according to an exclusive report in the Wall Street Journal, I mean, and again, oh my God, what a shock. What a shock. It now says, according to new info from intelligence sources, the most likely origin of COVID-19 and the start of the pandemic was a lab leak. Are you shocked, right? Weren't we told? And listen, I know that I was critical of some theories during this, but what did I keep saying now? We're going on about 3 years here? I kept saying over and over again, you have to wonder why everybody who said this smells of a lab leak here, especially scientists, not politicos, but especially scientists who, you know, are versed in this stuff, saying, this looked like a gain of function experiment that got a little out of control. And what did I keep saying? The fact that these people are shouted down. You know, the minute somebody says this, oh, you're engaging in xenophobia. That was my favorite one. If you're blaming the Chinese, and again, we're not blaming the good, hardworking hundreds of millions of fine Chinese families out there who have a rich and wonderful history dating back thousands of years. No, we're blaming the rot that is the Communist Party, the Chinese Communist Party. But nobody wanted to hear that over the past 3 years, you know, when people like me and anybody else said, how do you believe anything coming out of these people? How do you believe that? I'm sure 3/4 of their own people don't believe that. But we were told here in this country, shh, don't say anything. And when former President Trump called it the China virus, that might have been a little ill-mannered, but a lot of people, and not just a lot of people like me that pontificate, a lot of people in the science business started to say, and remember, if you remember back, how about all these Chinese and Taiwanese scientists and scientists from around Asia, Hong Kong, Singapore, Japan, these incredibly well-versed scientists, men and women with numerous degrees said, hey, this doesn't look like anything other than a big lab screw-up, right? And what happened? that idiot who, however you say his name, I can't. It's too many syllables for me right now, even with numerous amounts of caffeine since this morning. That guy that runs the World Health Organization. No. We shouldn't point at people. We shouldn't point blame at people. Oh, really? Let me give you a little of this right now, and then we'll get your thoughts. 203-333-9422-333-WICC. So let me give you this. I'm going to read a little bit here. Bear with me. I think it's fascinating because unless you subscribe to the Wall Street Journal like I do, it's well worth the money, and it's an invaluable resource, or watched any news coverage of it, you probably didn't hear this over the weekend. The U.S. Energy Department. Now, let's stop right there. This assessment comes from an energy department, or the energy department, under a Democratic president. So right away, you can stop with the, well, this is coming from Fox News, or it's coming from Matt Drudge, or it's coming as something is being spread so horrible from Elon Musk. No, this is coming from an energy department in a Democratic administration. The U.S. Energy Department has concluded that the COVID pandemic most likely arose from a laboratory leak. That is according to classified intelligence reported recently to the White House and many members of Congress. You know, so the next time we have either Jim Himes or Richard Blumenthal on this show, or perhaps Chris Murphy, I'd like to ask them, maybe Melissa will or maybe Lisa will, I'd ask them straight out, hey, Congressman Himes, Senator Murphy, Senator Blumenthal, were you given this information? Because according to the Wall Street Journal here, some key members of Congress and the White House got this information from the Energy Department. The shift by the Energy Department, which previously was undecided on how the virus emerged, is noted in an update to a 2021 document by Director of National Intelligence Avril Haines' office. The new report highlights how different parts of the intelligence community have arrived at disparate judgments about the pandemic's origin. The Energy Department now joins the FBI in saying the virus. So the FBI is saying this, too. But remember, when Mr. Trump was in office, oh, you can't say that. Stop that. It's going to upset Xi Jinping, and we need our cheap T-shirts at Walmart. The Energy Department now joins the FBI in saying the virus likely spread via a mishap at a Chinese lab. Four other agencies, along with the National Intelligence Panel, still judge that it was likely the result of a natural transmission, and two were undecided. The Energy Department's conclusion is the result of new intelligence and is significant because the agency has considerable scientific expertise and oversees a network of U.S. national labs, some of which, wink, wink, conduct advanced biological research. The Energy Department made its judgment with low confidence, though, according to people who've read the report. It's a classified report. The FBI previously came to the conclusion that the pandemic was likely the result of a lab leak back in 2021. With some moderate confidence, and they still hold that view. The FBI employs a cadre of microbiologists, immunologists, and other scientists, and is supported by the National Bioforensic Analysis Center. Bet you didn't know that existed. Which was established at Fort Detrick, Maryland, back in 2004 to analyze anthrax and other possible biological threats. Remember that whole thing with anthrax post 9/11? Oh, man. Remember how we were worried about anthrax? What was that medication? Cipro, something like that. I can't remember the name of it. Cipro something that they said they were going to start delivering in mass quantities to everybody because we were going to come under some anthrax attack. U.S. officials, however, declined to give details on the fresh intelligence and analysis that led to the Energy Department changing its position. They added that while the Energy Department and FBI each say an unintended lab leak is most likely, they arrived at their conclusions for different reasons. All right? Despite the differing analyses out there, the update reaffirmed an existing consensus between some agencies that COVID-19 was not the result of a Chinese bioweapons program, but the people who have read the that's according to people who have read the classified report. A senior intelligence official confirming that the intelligence community had conducted the update, whose existence has not been previously reported. This official added it was done in light of new intelligence, a further study of academic literature, and consultations with experts outside the government. So I just wanted to get you going on that. So there you go. Again, nobody is directly sure, because the only reason you can be sure is if the communists in China and the CCP and the lab admitted it. Now, who knows what this new intelligence is, right? When you hear new intelligence, is that one of our sources at Wuhan or within China saying, yeah, well, you know what, this, we screwed up. This is not like, you know, that whole bat stew story we were giving you. Maybe that spread it, but that's not how it started. So again, please understand, it's not like I sit here and say you have to believe one side or have to believe another, but just rewind your tape back. Remember when you all used tape? Rewind everything back about a year and a half, 2 years ago. And boy, if you mentioned that it was a lab leak and you were a scientist, now let alone if you were a dopey talk show host like me or some dope spouting anything. But man, if you were a scientist, oh, you were screamed and yelled at. I wonder why. Yeah, I know we're talking about snow tonight, tomorrow, maybe into later tomorrow night, but the warm weather is coming, right? Baseball exhibition games are underway, and pretty soon spring and summer, and going to be a lot of young folk out of school looking to make some extra money in a lot of different summer-based businesses like, you know, fast food places along roadsides, stores, cafes, amusement parks, who could use an influx of labor. But Connecticut's labor laws, as they stand right now, don't make it easy if you're 14 or 15 and you may be in junior high or a freshman in high school. You want to kind of jump in and get some pocket money and, you know, learn the value of a buck and sit there and do more than scroll through your social media feeds. Joining us right now, Republican State Senator Eric Berthel, who's sponsoring a bill trying to shake that up and maybe bring Connecticut in line with other states. It's always good to see what other states are doing in this. Eric, it's Paul here. It's been a while. How are you, sir?
I'm good, Paul. Always nice to chat with you. I hope all is well.
Yep, it is, and, Eric. Yep, appreciate that. Tell us about this bill here, because I saw it. You were written up about it, and I know there's been a hearing on it. So, Eric, lay this out for us. What does Connecticut law say right now about the age of workers, and how do we stand, Eric, vis-a-vis other states?
So, Paul, a couple of things to understand. Connecticut has some very important laws in place at the state level, and then, of course, we abide by various federal laws that come to us through federal agencies like OSHA. And with respect to hiring people that are under the legal age of adulthood, which is 18, right? So the two bills that I proposed this year were looking to expand opportunities for employment for young people that wanted to work in amusement parks in Connecticut. Of course, we know we really only have three official amusement parks in Connecticut. We have Sunny's all the way up in Stafford Springs. We have Lake Compounds in Bristol. And here in my district, we have Quasi Amusement Park in Middlebury. And then so there was a bill to allow 14 and 15-year-olds to go and work in these amusement park establishments in non-hazardous jobs. Right now, amusement parks are considered, any job in amusement park is considered hazardous, when the reality is that you could place a 14 or 15 year old into a ticket booth or have them run a cash register in a at the hot dog stand. You know, those are not considered hazardous jobs, and restaurants are allowed to do that today, as are, you know, department stores and other types of retail establishments. So that bill did have a hearing last week. We had George Francis, who's the owner of Quasi Amusement Park in Middlebury, came and testified. And I actually think the bill has a very good chance of getting out of committee and voted upon. You know, there's such a shortage of labor in Connecticut. We have 100,000 open jobs in Connecticut, Paul. And why not get young people into establishments where they have to show up on time, they may have to wear a uniform, they're learning some responsibility, they're making a good wage. I don't know about you. I wasn't making $14 or $15 an hour a long time ago when I was 14 years old.
Eric, $2.65 an hour for me when I started. Yep.
Well, you must be a little bit older than me. I think I was at $3.05.
There you go.
but you understandably, and here's the other thing. Understandably, it's real money today. And, you know, here's the other piece that's important about this. Allowing these 14 and 15-year-olds to go to work, they may also be able to help their families out. It may not be just a kid making, you know, some pin money, as you and I might have called it when we were young guys, but they might actually be helping to help their families survive. And what we know is still, despite a little bit of good economic news, is still a very expensive place to live. Connecticut is very unaffordable. So that's the one bill that we're looking at. The other bill was to allow younger people to work in some of the hazardous jobs within supermarkets. Right now, you have to be 18 years old to work in a hazardous job in a supermarket, which might include things like running a slicing machine in a deli to slice cold cuts. We did not go down to 14 or 15. We were looking at expanding that to 16 and 17-year-olds. And some of the logic was, you know, if you're able to drive a car, which is a dangerous, you know, object in and of itself, a dangerous machine, you should be able to be trained and taught how to safely run a slicer. And I'm not sure that bill is going to move forward this year. But Paul, I think anything we can do right now in the General Assembly to promote young people getting to work is going to help with all of what we're talking about workforce development and getting people that are young, that are, as you said, with your opening, you know, freshmen, maybe a junior high kid, they might find that career that they want, maybe not working at an amusement park, maybe not working in a supermarket, but they may find that career a little earlier. And maybe that kid goes into a trade. Maybe that kid goes and partners with one of these, you know, like they go to Sikorsky up in Stratford, and they get a job there right out of high school, because now we've offered them some opportunity to be trained in high school, right? This whole workforce development piece. My colleagues and I, the Senate Republicans, have a weather permitting, we'll have a press conference tomorrow announcing a huge workforce development bill that we hope will get some traction and support by a partisan basis, on a bipartisan basis in the Assembly this year, that does exactly what we're talking about. And we have to cultivate this youth and get them thinking about what they can do. They can go to college if they're ready to do that and they want to do it, but they can also go into some great careers right here in Connecticut. We have some of the best industry still in our state, some of the high-tech industry that doesn't exist anywhere else. So some really good stuff going on.
32nd Republican District State Senator Eric Berthel for a few more minutes with us. Some of the municipalities in his district, but not limited to Southbury, Woodbury, Watertown, Bethlehem, Washington, Roxbury, and surrounding areas. Eric, I just wanted to touch base with you here in the time we have left, moving on from the labor issue here. Just on the budget and spending, you know, Governor Lamont came out a couple of weeks ago, and he seemed very effusively happy with you know, some of the guardrails. That's the word of the day now in the Capitol, which is good. Yes. The guardrails that are in there because of Republican influence from a few sessions ago. A 5-year implementation of that, re-implementation, I guess, has been decided on. But, you know, Eric, I know there are still going to be forces who are going to say we have to spend more. We have all this money. We have to spend more. What are your thoughts on where this all might end up, Eric, with future spending? And if we stay on the path here, that so far so good is keeping us above water.
You know, Paul, great question. Thank you. I think that my colleagues on the left realize that when you put good policy in place 5 years ago, you can see the effect of that. And that's what we're living in right now. But let's not be blind to the fact that because we have very high inflation and Connecticut taxes just about everything we buy, we are also seeing a significant increase in revenue that was not necessarily planned for. But your point about the guardrails that we have secured in terms of our bonding caps for 5 years with an automatic renewal for another five show that the governor who asked us to do this and wanted 10 years right up front, the governor gets it too. The governor understands. I actually think his budget had some very fine, had some very good points to it. I think at the end of the day, 100 days from today, we will gavel out for this long session, 100 days, which is only, you know, a little more than 3 months. I think that we will see spending generally controlled. I think my colleagues on the left are scared to overspend to a certain degree. They don't want to push us into this deficit doom that we've lived in for the last decade or so. So I think they're going to be very deliberate about what they spend on. And I think we're going to see spending on education, which probably won't be a bad thing. We'll see spending on workforce development, which we already talked a little bit about. And I think we'll see spending on adjusting some of the delivery of health care in Connecticut. Those seem to be the really big issues for us right now. It seems to be what we're spending the most amount of time on. But, you know, Paul, I don't have a crystal ball, and I have certainly, I'll freely admit, I have been very wrong in the past on the futuristic looking, forward looking, whatever you want to call it, comments like this. But I sure as heck hope we don't overspend and overtax and, you know, or add to our tax burden. Connecticut's had enough. It's really expensive to live here, and we need to be very careful about this good situation that we're in right now and not screw it up, to be perfectly honest.
Hey, Eric, thanks. Appreciate the time. Republican State Senator Eric Berthel, District 32. Eric, take care. Be good. We'll talk down the road. Thanks.
Thanks, Paul.
Appreciate it. State Senator Republican Eric Berthel, again, the 32nd District, which is generally areas like Washington, Connecticut, Bethlehem, Watertown, outside Waterbury, Woodbury, Middlebury, Southbury, Oxford, Roxbury, Bridgewater. So if you live in any of those districts and are not really following politics closely in the state, that gentleman may represent you.